Hello there, friends. Happy Canada Day. I'm Scott Fardella, and this is Into the Void. Today, we have a very special episode. Earlier this week, Bill C-45 passed the Senate in Canada, which will make our country the second country in the world to legalize marijuana. So I thought it would be fitting to have Miranda Jones on the podcast. She's a registered nurse and an educator who does medical outreach for a company called GrowWise. They specialize in medical cannabis authorization and education. On top of that, she's a nutritional health nurse and a holistic wellness coach through her new company, Chaos Holistics. She's a busy lady. Listen at the end of the podcast and we'll tell you how you can get in touch with her, because I promise you, you'll want to. This whole episode will be talking about marijuana and its future in Canada, so please enjoy Miranda Jones and the Marijuana episode. Miranda Jones, wild hippie child. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for joining me.
Ready? No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Bill C-45, what are your thoughts?
I've been getting asked that a lot. You know, it's hard. I think it's going to be hard to tell how it's going to roll out and how it's going to play out and the effects it's going to have until it actually happens. I don't think it's going to change much. Like, I feel like people who already use marijuana recreationally, it's going to be the same people. It's just going to be more easily accessible for them. So I feel like it's going to be safer. I don't know. I think it's going to be a good thing. I think it's going to be positive. I think people are picturing a big flock of new high people just like swarming the city.
But
do not picture that happening.
You don't think there's going to be flocks of like 16-year-olds just getting high everywhere? Driving high.
Yeah, having psychotic breaks and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I do not foresee that happening. I don't see new people taking this up just because you buy it at the drugstore.
No.
I mean, maybe the one-off person at a party might be more inclined to like try it. But I don't know. I don't think we're going to see much of a change, to be honest.
No, I think people are really alarmist with that. You don't see it with alcohol. Like, people, it happens. Like, young people drink alcohol. But I think, first of all, alcohol is far more damaging to young people than marijuana would be. But I don't know. I don't think this is going to create, like, a generation of drug-addicted young people or something like that. Like, that's ridiculous. I think, if anything, this will alleviate some of the pressure on the criminal justice system and probably help a lot of people out that are in need of medical use marijuana, if it kind of breaks that logjam of people needing it for that use.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. I think people, there's a lot of fear, and a lot of it is fear of the unknown. I mean, a lot of the fear is coming from those older generations that, to be fair, did grow up in a time where it was highly stigmatized. Like, it was taught in schools that if you did marijuana, that you would inevitably get schizophrenia, you would inevitably get a psychotic break, or you were into bad things. It's kind of like tattoos, right?
Yeah.
We've seen a huge societal shift in how people see people who have tattoos. And it's the same with marijuana. We see it all the time in history. I think it's just going to be one more of those things that like everyone freaks out about. It's going to happen and everyone's going to be like, oh, it's like the minimum wage increase. Remember how much people freaked out about that?
Yeah. And then never mind. I was going to go.
No,
I won't even get into that.
No, we won't get that. That's a topic for another day.
Speaking of the tattoos thing though, I just started a new job this week and I was speaking to my grandpa about it on the weekend prior to me starting, and he's like, you may want to cover your tattoos before you go in on Monday. And I was like, Grandpa, this isn't the 90s. Like, nobody gives a shit that I have a hand tattoo.
I know, he's like, you're going to see him from prison.
Yeah. No, nobody's going to think that. Young 20-year-olds have face tattoos. I'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck. No, I know. I love tattoos. They speak so much for the person that has them. It's so cool. It's like writing your soul right on your skin.
Yeah, and they're like character building now. It's harder to find somebody that doesn't have tattoos now than somebody with like even just a small one. There are probably at least as many people with tattoos as without now, if you're over 18 or whatever, I would think.
Oh, for sure.
They're so prevalent.
I don't know, older people kind of look down on them, but I feel like most older people also have tattoos.
Yeah, even older people now are getting tattoos, later in life, you know, or at least don't have, are, open to it. You know, the normal, fear of the pain or whatever, the permanence, but they're open to the idea. I don't know too many people that are completely opposed to either the idea of tattoos or people with tattoos.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like there's been a really cool shift, I feel like, with a lot of stigma on a lot of things, whether it be cannabis or tattoos or anything with the generations. And the older generations are really coming to appreciate kind of the things that they were looking down on before. And I feel like it's because our generation was kind of just you know what, fuck it. This is not working. What we're doing is not working. So we're going to do something different. And I think the older generations are starting to see that it's working.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wait, hang on a second. Maybe we were looking at this wrong. And I've really seen a lot of middle age to older people really coming around.
Yeah, hopefully
it's gonna get better.
As long as they're not like just stuck in their ways and bitter or whatever, then yeah, they're at least open-minded about it. You know more about marijuana than probably any person I've ever met. Explain to people, well, first of all, explain to people what Bill C-45 is and like the legal framework that's in place now, if you can, and then what it is that you do at GrowWise.
Okay, so Bill C-45 is the legislation that Canada will be rolling out for recreational use of marijuana. So currently it's decriminalized but not legal, which means you can't be criminally charged, but you can be charged. And then, so currently medical cannabis is legal when authorized by a physician or other healthcare practitioner. So Bill C-45 is purely for recreational. So as of, I believe, October 17th, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. The
date. Yeah, perfect. That Trudeau announced is going to be rolled out. And as of that date, it will be legal to, you know, to be honest, I don't know how much you're allowed to have. Did they put a limit? Did you hear?
I have not, but I can't actually check it right now because, I'm on my laptop.
I'm curious, actually, now that I'm thinking about that.
I will look it up, and I'll add it to the Instagram when we post this.
Okay, perfect, because that's interesting to think about, actually. Because I know with medical cannabis, say someone writes you a prescription for 1 gram a day, you're authorized to order up to a month's worth, so you're authorized to have up to 30 grams at one time on you. So
which is a lot. That's a lot. And even
that's a lot. And 1 gram's the minimum prescription usually.
Yeah, that's a crazy amount. The exciting thing for me is the progressive nature of this bill will kind of set a precedent for other drugs in the future. That's what I'm excited about. So that MAPS program, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelics. Something or other. They're testing psychedelics like psilocybin mushrooms and MDMA on microdosing and therapeutic uses. And those types of things, if they can prove their efficacy, which I think they can, it's exciting that this legislation is coming so soon in Canada because it opens the door for those types of things. If there are better ways to treat like PTSD or Alzheimer's or any of those neurodegenerative diseases, then this is amazing because we could have those things legalized as well in the next decade, the next 5 years even. That's amazing. It's really exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Medicine's going in a super, super exciting direction right now. Yeah. And, to be honest, it's just because the issues that we're facing in our everyday life, Western medicine just isn't working.
No.
Western medicine comes into play when things, in my opinion at least, when issues get to be a last resort. When you're bleeding, when you're dying, when you're having a heart attack, when you're having a stroke, when you have a bacterial infection, those are the times when Western medicine is appropriate. But there is a whole nother world of medicine out there that we have been so close-minded to. It includes a lot of things like cannabis and those psychedelics that, if you think about it, are pharmacologically just like the medicines that we use every day. They're just creating different chemical reactions that we don't understand yet.
Yeah, and they're not, I mean, they're not synthesized. They're not, yeah, they're natural for the most part. And nobody's making money off of them right now. It can't be controlled. So I think that's why they're not pushed to market. But you're not speaking from a place of inexperience either. So explain to people your background, your work history, because you know what you're talking about as far as Western medicine, and you've worked in it.
Yeah, so I've done a little bit of everything. So a couple years ago, I graduated from nursing school, became a registered nurse, got hired immediately into a correctional facility as well as an emergency department. I was super stoked. My dream had always been to be in critical care medicine, got into critical care medicine, and was so, I don't know the word, was so sad about how I found my experience there, because I realized that we weren't helping 90% of the people that came through that door. Now, I realize that it is an emergency room. There's a time and a place, but I see that in all Western medicine clinics, and it's because they're overrun, understaffed, and they treat very selective illnesses in a very selective way. So a lot of the illnesses we're seeing today are, I don't know, autoimmune disorders, chronic diseases, inflammatory disorders, gut disorders, and those can't be helped there. So that was really frustrating to me. As well as with the mental health, that was another big one. Incredibly frustrating to me. I knew I wanted to play a bigger role in people's lives. So I left emergency, didn't really know what I was going to do. I started working at a local company, Simply Well. And there I provided nutritional information, took some nutritional courses, and gained a lot of knowledge about functional medicine. So functional medicine is using things like your everyday nutrition, breathing, eating, sleeping, all those things to make yourself healthier and make your body function better. So I learned about that there and started using it on myself. Saw great results. And then I got hired by GrowWise Health. And GrowWise Health is a company out of Toronto. Great company run by a lot of really cool, passionate young people. It's a medical cannabis company. So we actually have doctors that authorize, so we'll prescribe medical cannabis for patients that they deem appropriate. And then patients come to see me. So I am a nurse educator, and I help patients navigate sort of the legislation and registration process in Canada when it comes to medical cannabis. Lots of people are really lost on everything. They know nothing about cannabis. They're all confused. They were they're 80-year-olds who, when they were 20-year-olds, everyone was smoking up and getting high, and they were the hippies, right?
Yeah. Well, even young people, I don't think know, like I didn't personally until I had Miranda into the cafe when the cafe was still open for a educational medicinal marijuana workshop. And it was one of the busiest workshops we ever did. And I didn't know a lot of that stuff until I listened to a bit of the workshop and got a bit of information that just what your rights are, what you're able to get, what it's able to treat, all that kind of information. It's super useful to know. And I think most people just simply don't take the time to research. Or there's a lot of misinformation out there as well, or whatever.
Well, I think that's the issue. Like, that's the biggest issue when it comes to integrated or alternative health, whatever you want to call it, in general. And that's a big part of why I do what I do, is that it's so hard to navigate. Like, it's so hard to know what's a good source, what's not a good source, what's true and not true, right? Like, not everybody learned how to research properly.
Yeah, well, and even I guess even as we talked about during, like, that night that you were there, most doctors right now don't even know. So even if you went to your doctor and said, hey, do you think I could get medical marijuana use for my disorder, whatever it is, they may not know, and they may not even recommend it because they aren't up on the efficacy of marijuana for treating whatever disorder it is you have. Or they have a stigma against it as well, and they would rather see you go on something that they recommend, or it's hubris or whatever. But yeah, a lot of doctors currently are not necessarily against it, but steer their patients away from it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is stigma. I think a lot of that is myths and just being uncomfortable being the primary authorizer for something that, again, is so weird to them. Because right. I know, especially like here in Kingston, a lot of the physicians are a lot older. So their education was very different. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have a different perspective on marijuana. And imagine having one perspective on one thing your entire career, and then you get near the end of it and someone's like, oh, no, wait, this is a really good medicine. You should learn to prescribe it, but you've been against it your whole life.
That pisses me off so much. You're a scientist. That's what scientists do.
Yes.
You change your opinions based on new evidence. Be a good scientist.
Exactly. And that's the part I have a very hard time being okay with, because it's just, you're right. Like, it's not okay to call yourself a scientist or a practitioner or a healthcare person of any sort and say that you're helping people if you're not willing to do the work behind the scenes and do that research and better yourself and always be seeking more education. There's always something new to learn.
But back to one thing you were talking about earlier, you were speaking about the Western medicine and the techniques that we, like the things that we prescribe. And I was thinking as you were talking about if that's a cultural thing because North Americans are litigious. I don't know if we're more litigious than other countries or other cultures, but like as far as legal action and liability and things like that, I wonder if a lot of the prescriptions and things like that are what they are because people are afraid of getting sued. Like they put treatments in a box. They treat specific things as opposed to a holistic treatment that treats everything but is less quantifiable. Like I know we tout the scientific method as gospel, but there is something to be said about holistic methods that treat illnesses or disorders as a whole, as opposed to like an autoimmune disorder that is localized in your stomach or in your guts that specifically has to be treated. And that's the only way to treat it, is to treat that part of it. But like typically autoimmune diseases, that's a whole number of things. That's your stress level. That's your diet. That's everything. It's your, you know, has so much to do with your entire life, your lifestyle, but we don't treat it that way. They're treated very specialized.
Definitely. And I saw that all the time as a nurse. That's one of the biggest things that frustrated me and why I left, is because I don't agree with that approach at all. I really don't understand how a person could have the knowledge of anatomy and physiology and pharmacology and truly think about the human body and not automatically think that it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
That one thing gets inflamed, it's going to totally have a cascading effect and affect other things. I constantly have patients coming in to see me who will say, it's a classic picture of inflammation, and their doctors never said so. I don't know if the doctors literally don't know, but if the doctors don't know about inflammation, I'm seriously concerned for the future of our patients. But they'll constantly come in and be like, I have a headache, I have anxiety, I have IBS, I have muscle and joint pain. Like, to me, that's screaming, you are chronically inflamed.
Yeah.
Like, you need a diet adjustment. You need a sleep assessment. You need a stress assessment. Like, these are all, but you know what the doctor will do? He'll treat all of those as separate issues and treat them all separately.
And medicate and whatever else. And I mean, sometimes medication is the answer, but like, God, I reiterate this all the time. Like, diet, stress and sleep are so huge that so many people are just not getting enough of, like, a healthy diet, enough sleep, and a lot of people don't know how to manage their stress to the point where it makes them sick. And just in general, bad habits, like I feel sick all the time. Are you a smoker? Well, yeah. Okay, well, get the fuck out of here then, you know? Like,
know.
You're poisoning your body constantly and you're always sick. Wow, that is shocking. Yeah. It's so frustrating.
One plus one equals two.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that people are can be so like ignorant of their own health. And like it, to me, it's simple. If you pay attention to your body, if you're aware of the things that you're putting in your body and the way you treat yourself, then the way you feel can be fairly obvious, you know, like, yeah. I don't know. I have really paid attention to the way my body responds to different things. Like I know when I'm stressed and I know when I've eaten something that I shouldn't or eaten more than I should have, or if I haven't had enough sleep and I'm like irritable, I give myself a break because I'm like, God, why am I so pissy today? And then I'm like, oh, have I eaten today? Have I had too much sugar today? Did I not get enough sleep last night? And you kind of give yourself a break that way, but you don't write it off as like, I don't know, like, oh, I'm just having a bad day. It's like, no, well, I just didn't get enough sleep last night. So maybe tonight I'll get more sleep. And that's an easy remedy for a lot of things.
Yeah. And, but to be fair, man, you are like, so other level, like aware, like and conscious and mindful and curious. I'm like woke, you're bro. The why kid. You're the why kid. How many were you that why kid? Like why?
Yes,
why?
Always. Like, always. I've always been curious. Yeah.
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 So I'm the same way, and I agree with you completely. To me, it seems so obvious. It's literally like. I call it, I don't know, you can call it a bunch of different things, like real life magic, your intuition, visions, auras, energies, I don't care, whatever you want to call it, that shit is real. And I'm with you, like if you learn to tap into how you're feeling and be aware, like you said, I'm tired today, why am I tired? Like you should not feel tired. If you just slept 8 hours and woke up and everything is honky-dory, and your diet's fine and you don't have inflammation, you shouldn't feel tired. So you're right. Why do you feel tired?
Yeah.
And that's the key right there. But that takes such a high level of mindfulness that a lot of people just do not have.
I guess. Yeah. A lot of people are in autopilot, just whatever, thinking about the weekend or getting off from work or relationship troubles or whatever, I suppose. But pause for a second. Let's go back. Do you believe in auras?
Hell yeah. Oh man, God. I believe in all that real life magic energy stuff.
Well folks, this has been fun. I gotta go.
You do not believe in auras?
I don't know, maybe. I haven't seen one.
You don't believe in electromagnetic frequencies?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I believe in that because I mean that's just biology. Science. Yeah, it's just science. But like being able to see auras and shit, like when people are like, you've got a good energy about you. I don't know.
I'm not convinced on visualizing like an electromagnetic color around you. However, I don't know, getting nerdy. If you think about perception, it's all about how you see. Okay. I have a question for you.
Shoot.
Let's go back to psychedelics.
Yeah.
What's your theory about what happens when you take psychedelics? Is your theory that it distorts reality or that it clears reality?
I believe it is a distortion of reality. I think it's the same thing that happens when you're dreaming. It's just during wakefulness. So it's like your body producing chemicals that make you see things that you wouldn't otherwise see. So it's a distortion of reality, but that doesn't make it any less real. But there would be consequences in the real world. So it's not real because it's only happening to you. You know what I mean?
But how do you know that?
Because you can have three people that are not high that are just sitting there. They're like, oh, I'm just watching you trip balls right now.
Okay, but then getting like theoretical here, like how do you know who's right and who's seeing the real and who's seeing something that maybe those people aren't producing a chemical that you should be producing?
That's fair, but I would argue that if those three people are seeing the same thing and you're seeing something else, then, you know, I got to side with rationality and be like, okay, those three are probably more correct. But you never know. Maybe there is. Maybe psychedelics are the doorway to another dimension. I mean, that certainly seems possible. I've certainly had some interesting experiences.
Yeah. I don't know. I just know, like, I've done psychedelics one time in my life, and it just changed me. Like, I feel like I've never connected to nature and living things the same way ever again, and I just don't believe that that, you know, doesn't happen on some sort of
energetic level. Did you drop acid and become Snow White and just go into the forest?
No, it was shrooms.
Oh, shrooms. And then you were just a friend to all... Prim, can you relax?
No, it was shrooms.
That was my cat.
It was shrooms. I was outside and it was actually amazing. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm a science brain. I'm a thinker. I like to think theories. Theories really interest me. And I always theorize that, like, trees could connect with you and breathe. Like, I don't believe it's a coincidence that all of these Aboriginal cultures and Native cultures have these stories about connecting with nature and magic and colors and all those things. And you see these things repeated throughout history.
Well, and there's a reason
society just squashes all of it.
Yeah. If any of the listeners want a really interesting series of books, and maybe you do too, Tales of Power with Don Juan. Don Juan, I can't remember his last name, but it's by a series of books by Carlos Castaneda, and they follow around. They're written as fact, but they read like fiction because they're just off the fucking wall. but this guy Carlos Castaneda writes kind of in the first person. It's his experiences with Don Juan, who is South American bruja, which is like a witch or a warlock, and he, I believe, is a Toltec native, and they talk about eating power plants, which I imagine was peyote, and just all these crazy experiences going into different dimensions and shape shifting and all these insane things. And like I said, he writes about it like it's fact. And I mean, if you Google it, it a lot of people think it's bullshit, and it certainly could be, but it's still, like, really fascinating that, because this is modern, like, this, people still believe this and carry these traditions, that certain plants can open portals to different dimensions and shit like that, and the things that you see while you're high, because, like, I believe it's DMT, most people who use DMT report seeing similar or same things when they get high, like the geometric shapes and all that stuff. And that's really interesting to me that you would have similar experiences having that not been explained to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's but I guess that could just be doing the same thing chemically to your brain as it does to mine. I don't know. But it's neat. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And you know what, like, even if all of that stuff isn't true, like, but you know, no, like, I can't say it's not true, because again, if I'm thinking like a scientist, I'm just thinking about energy the way it is. Like, I can't help deny that. Well, okay, so I'm veering off from the psychedelics, let me bring you back to my thought train here. Okay. veering off from the psychedelics, going back,
might be really high right now.
We're going back to talking about, like, energies and stuff like that. Like, you can't deny that exists, because we know energy exists.
So, yeah.
like, one of the main laws of physics is that energy cannot be created and destroyed. Therefore, everything that exists as it is had to have been something else before.
Yeah.
And, like, the thought of that is just that cells in my body might have belonged into a tree.
To the stars.
I don't know. From there, it's not that much of a stretch.
No.
That, like, all of these energies and auras and all of that stuff really does truly exist.
Elements that compose the sun are inside you, you know? I get it.
Exactly. If that's not magical, I don't know what is.
Well, and if you believe, like, the many worlds theory, that multiple existences are happening simultaneously, and that every iteration of everything you do, like, there are so many multitudes, like millions and millions of iterations of things that could potentially happen at any given second and veer off in another direction, and those things are all happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. In that universe or collection of universes, I suppose it would be plausible for this, however unlikely, for these insane experiences to happen, like, and to be real, like in some wild universe, these psychedelics do open up new worlds, and there's crazy unicorns and shit flying through the air, and that would be neat. I want to believe. I really do.
I guess I've never had a psychedelic experience that wasn't that extremely unrealistic. So mine was more like the trees were breathing.
Oh, okay.
Like everything.
I've heard that
like
before, the snow actually.
It was a bunch of colors. And like to me, I'm like, hey, maybe like this is like this. My judgment's just clouded.
Was it you that told me that experience that the trees were like vibrating? Or there was like ripples?
Yeah, they were literally breathing. They looked like they were inhaling and exhaling.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really neat.
It was so magical. I've never experienced anything like it. It was insane.
You fucking
hippie.
And
yeah, like after experiencing something like that, I don't know. And you just had such a strong, like I'm sure anyone who's done this stuff in the forest has experienced the same thing. But you just experienced that total and utter validation.
You
that
went
there
out.
There is a connection between you and nature.
Yeah. You went out and bought a poncho the following week and a pair of wicker sandals, and you just stopped shaving entirely. Because you're just like, fuck it, I'm going to live in nature now.
legit.
Immediately.
Yeah.
One psychedelic experience is enough to just tip you over the edge. I bought a camper van, and I'm going to live in nature, off the grid. And yeah. I'm changing my name to Rose Petal.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So tell me about your new company you're starting. How's it going? Chaos Holistics, everyone. Miranda is going to fix you holistically and completely in a poncho.
So we're just starting up right now. I always say we, like
the royal we, like you. Yeah, I get it. I refer to Southpaw as we. Yeah, it does. Yeah, when there, it's not just one person sitting behind their laptop in their underwear. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, no, totally not that at all.
No.
But anyway, moving forward, if you want to check it out on Instagram, it is at Chaos Holistics, Chaos Holistics. So right now, basically my main goal with this company is to, like I said before, help people feel well holistically and help people navigate the system. So basically, if you're interested, you throw me a message, you can DM me on Instagram. I do an initial assessment. So I'm a certified holistic life coach. So basically you come in, I do a full assessment of you. Since I am a nurse, I can also assess you physically, and I do have nutritional coaching as well, training. So you can feel like you're safe and secure with me. After I do an assessment, I kind of identify some main areas of your life that we could maybe focus on, whether that be stress reduction, mindfulness and awareness of what your problems are themselves. Maybe you just aren't really aware of them. If you have some actual physical health problems, mental health problems, finding your purpose in life, if you're just feeling lost or stressed or anxious and you have no idea why. You know, there's like everyday life problems where there should be somewhere to go. Like, why isn't there like a health center where it's like, well, they're popping up now, but it's like, hey, I'm feeling tired today, or I'm feeling bloated today. What the hell's going on?
I think
you could never walk into your doctor and be like, hey, I'm feeling bloated today.
Yeah. I think that type of therapy is, really underutilized and underappreciated. Just like everyday things, like, raising awareness of just life issues that affect your overall well-being it's such a great idea. I love it. I totally ascribe to that lifestyle that like everything affects everything. And to me, that's not like, that's so intuitive. That just should feel natural to you. Like you can see it in your own life. You can see those results. So if you ate a huge bowl of pasta, you feel like dirt, a bag of dirt right afterwards, you know, because you've just had like a shitload of sugar, there's a huge insulin dump, and now you've overloaded your body, and you have no energy afterwards, right? And that's direct cause and effect. You can test that right now. You know, and everything in life is like that. Like every aspect of your life is like that. You have too much coffee and then or caffeine, and then all of a sudden you're more irritable or anxious, or you find yourself worrying about things more. Well, no shit, you just had a triple-triple or whatever, you know?
I know.
People don't connect those things, though.
No, they don't. I know, it's crazy. So, yeah, so basically my role would be to point those things out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like I said, it literally comes down to them not even realizing. Like, they'll fill out this questionnaire. They will ask them a bunch of questions, like, how often... like how many times a day do you go to the bathroom? Like how often do you have nausea? How often do you have headaches? And they'll fill in this questionnaire and they'll be like, holy shit. Like, yeah. I did not realize how crappy I felt all the time.
That's, I mean, just that. Okay. So people just taking an inventory. That was one of the first, so I got really sick, when I was like 15 and I had to see a nutritionist and everything like that. And, one of the first things they had me do was take like an inventory of everything I ate and just everything in my day. So how many hours, and actually when I think about it, that was 17 years ago. That was very progressive for the time for her to do that. And thank God she did, because just taking an inventory of the number of hours of sleep that you got, every single thing you ate, and then doing like an elimination diet to figure out what it was that was making you sick. And not only that, but like if you're having blood work done, then they can monitor what is affecting your levels. So like your iron and your potassium and all these different metrics. And if you've got an inventory of everything you've eaten in the past few days or week or whatever it's been, then you can actually, you can narrow down exactly what it is that's making you sick or making you feel whatever way you're feeling. It's so useful to do that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And again, I think it's just, people don't know how to navigate it. Like a lot of people know they should try. They're like, I've heard of something called the elimination diet, but it's so overwhelming because you Google elimination diet and you'll come up with like 20 different results. So people just don't know where to start, and physicians don't help. And a lot of people, like alternative healthcare practitioners, are usually pretty expensive. So I don't know. It's hard. There's a lot of factors that come into play, I think, why people don't do this. Also, a lot of people literally will be like, dairy? I can't cut dairy out. That's crazy. No way. I'm not doing it. You know, it's like, try it.
Yeah.
See how you feel.
You'll be fine without dairy. Trust me. It doesn't even have to be all dairy. Just reduce the amount of dairy. I barely, like I never drink milk anymore. Except like maybe a little bit of cream in my coffee, and I eat yogurt, but like I'll never eat ice cream. I don't have milkshakes or anything like that. And I do not miss it at all. Like at all. To me, it didn't do anything good for me. It made my stomach just ache and makes you really phlegmy. It's just, I don't know. It's not great. There are different ways, other ways to get protein and calcium and those things. Yeah.
And there's just like, in this day and age, it's just so easy. Like it might be a little bit more difficult. And well, not even, because if you live in a more rural area, you have access to tendency or to have access to more fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. But like in a city, there's so many healthy alternatives that taste so great that are good healthy alternatives now. Like alternative dairy products like almond milk and coconut milk and stuff like that. Like if you want to have milk in your coffee, you still can. And not have milk. Or like you said, like a milk in your coffee is not going to kill you.
No.
It's not going to hurt you. It's everything in moderation.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good rule in life. Let's talk about stress for a minute, because that's another big thing that I don't think enough people pay attention to. Like really, again, take an inventory of all the things that might trigger your stress and then have the courage to drop those things. Like if you're in a bad relationship, and it's making you physically ill, like or you're losing weight or whatever, like you can, it's terrible to say, but you can kind of tell when people are in bad relationships. If they start losing a shitload of weight, sometimes you're like, you know what I mean, you can pick those couples out. Like you saw that couple 6 months ago and now they're both just like thin as rakes or whatever. You're like, God, I wonder what's happening there, you know? to me, that's it's just such a telltale sign of something is not right there or whatever. They're fighting a lot, or I would bet money on it for a lot of couples that it's just not, I don't know, because it's not overall healthy, and it's just indicative of a lifestyle thing to me. But anyway, I digress. What would you say to people if they wanted to manage their stress better?
Well, I'd say the first thing that you have to do, it depends on, again, where you are at kind of stages of awareness. So if you're already aware of what's making you stressed, then, okay, so let's go back. So step one would be become aware of what's making you stressed. So there are a lot of people walking around and they know they feel this slight feeling of anxiety or this feeling of stress all the time. But if you ask them, like, what's wrong, they'd be like, oh, nothing's wrong. And it's like, nope, there's something going on. So the first step would be to become aware of what's making you stressed. And a good way to do that is to keep a journal. But instead, a lot of people know how to keep food journals, but you can keep a daily journal of main events that happened throughout the day and how they made you feel. And you don't have to overthink it. Like, just do the basic emotions. So joy, sadness, anger, frustration. Even stick with those and just jot it down how they made you feel. You go over that for a couple weeks, you're gonna easily spot your triggers if you don't know them. Once you know your triggers, a lot of people identify their triggers, they tend to try to avoid them. So they go, oh, it makes me really anxious working with people, so I'm gonna find a job where I don't have to work with people. Well, unfortunately, maybe you happen to find a job where you don't work with people, but you're going to run into people every day of your life. That's an unavoidable stress. Mm-hmm. So if it's something like that, you're not going to be able to avoid that. And you're going to have to learn to come up with ways on how to approach that stressor. And that goes into a bunch of different stuff that I could work with you on. There's a bunch of mindfulness, kind of cognitive self-talk things that I do personally that are very effective for people who are in those unavoidable stressful situations.
Yeah. We talked about that book by Dr. Gabor Maté. I talked about mm-hmm. Gabor Maté a couple episodes ago, but he wrote that book. I think it's called When the Body Says No, The Hidden Costs of Stress. And yes. One thing that he talks about that most really stressed out people don't do is they don't have the assertiveness to say no. Most of the time. So yeah. They're overworked because they can't say no to their boss, or they're pushed around in relationships because they can't say no to their spouse. They're stuck in like stressful situations because they don't know how to set boundaries, those types of things. So developing, like practicing self-care and self-esteem and self raising your self-worth enough to be able to put your foot down and draw a boundary so that you don't take on undue stress, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, like we mentioned before, everything's connected. So if your body's not in good shape, you're not going to feel confident in your mind. You're not going to feel healthy enough, like you said, to set those boundaries. You're not going to feel safe. You're not going to feel secure. You're not going to feel like you can. If you're sleeping well, if you're eating well, if you're making an effort to live the life you want to live, that's a big one too. Yeah. If you're confident that you're living the life that you want to live, these stressors can come at you, but you're going to be resilient enough to set those boundaries and put those techniques into place. And you're not going to be burnt out. Because like you said, chronic stress over a long period of time, it has a lot of negative effects on the body and the mind. It literally wires your nervous system and your adrenals and doesn't allow them to respond to stress appropriately. You're always in fight or flight mode constantly.
Yeah.
So it's getting yourself out of that, preventing yourself from getting there in the first place, and learning ways when you do get there, how to bring yourself out of it.
Well, break that down for people that may not know like what stress does to the body. So from your fight or flight response, what is it, the HPA axis, and how that triggers everything in your mind and the release of chemicals. So what that does to you, you explain it, you're a nurse. You'd be better to explain it than me.
So basically, your mind perceives a stressor, your body perceives a stressor, sends a signal to your hypothalamus, which is a part in your brain, so it's the H of the HPA. Then it sends a signal to the pituitary gland, which is the P, that is another part in your brain that is responsible for releasing a lot of the hormones in your body. The hormones in your body are responsible for sending messages, kind of telling your body what to do, how your body communicates with each other. So the pituitary gland releases one of these hormones as chemical messenger, and it sends to your adrenal glands. And your adrenal glands are these little organs that sit on top of your kidneys, and they regulate steroids and epinephrine. So they regulate that fight or flight response, that adrenaline response. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you have grown up under a lot of chronic stress, you see this a lot in people who didn't have the best childhood experience, had very angry parents or short-tempered parents, abused kids, anyone who's been in a traumatic abused relationship, you'll see this a lot. Nurses, you'll see this a lot. Anyone who doesn't pay attention to their health and just keeps their body under that chronic stress, your body will try to compensate and it will regulate that for as long as possible, but eventually it just burns out. It loses the fuel in the tank. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, your nervous system will try and kind of take over to compensate and be like, hey, it's okay, everything's okay, but that's a lot more short-lived and that can only hang on there for so long. So once that's burnt out, you have no stress regulation. So that's where you see the people where they're walking around and you say something to them and they snap at you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh,
the way I think about it is like, if your body is a machine and mm-hmm. one part of that machine is overclocked, then the rest of your body, the rest of that machine has to compensate somehow. Like if it was all running, if it was all running kind of in tandem, in harmony, I guess, and everything was running as it should, then, you know, there'll be regular wear and tear, but nothing outside the norm. But if one part of that machine is overclocked, then the rest of the machine has to make up for it. And that's what happens to your body. And it just, it has, like, stress specifically has so many negative impacts on your overall health. They're finding, like, it suppresses your immune system. It can really, if you suffer from an autoimmune disease like Crohn's or MS or rheumatoid arthritis, it really spikes inflammation, things like that. Like, it's, and just literally, like, every part of your health is affected by stress. So it's crazy how much it affects.
Oh yeah, no, it's so insane. And a lot of people don't take it seriously. They especially the type A's.
Yeah.
Like I am a type A. I got very, very sick from mm-hmm. working myself way too hard, taking on way too much, like you said, not setting boundaries, not saying no, just thinking like, hey, I can grind through this. I've been grinding through this. I'll just keep grinding. It's almost like, yeah, you go on this, like, there's the fight, flight, and then there's this freeze mode.
Yeah.
That what happens after the adrenals are burnt. And that's what you get into. And it's just, you're just like a fucking zombie. Just like wander around, like getting up in the morning, doing whatever during the day. Like you're not, you don't eat. Mm-hmm. You never want to eat. Your body just stops functioning because it's overrun. And type A's are at such a high risk for so much disease. And this is exactly why. Their body can't repair itself, like you said.
I feel like culturally that's starting to shift more and more, that people are getting away from that. I fucking hate seeing that now. Like I used to in my early 20s or even mid 20s, I used to kind of live by that like rise and grind bullshit where it was like, if you're not working 18 hours a day, you're not grinding hard enough. And that, I mean, as somebody who has worked that often, it almost seems like hypocritical of me to say that. But while I was working at the cafe and doing 12-hour days, I was also treating my body right so that I didn't burn out. Like I was very, very conscious always of the amount of sleep that I got and The meals that I took in, the nutrition that I gave my body, I was exercising as much as I could. So, like, it's not, you can't just grind and expect your body to be okay, like your mental health to be okay. Like, that pervasive cultural attitude that if you just work your ass off, like, that's valuable. I think people are getting away from that and leaning more towards, like, just living your life and being happy is, and being healthy is better than that, I don't know, that stupid grind it out, bro. It's fucking ridiculous. I can't stand that.
It is ridiculous. And yeah, as a nurse, especially, like, I really can't stand it. Like, the amount of elderly people, not even super elderly, like, in their 50s, in their 60s, coming in with these, like, chronic kidney and liver problems because of the life they've been living. Yeah, you worked hard, but because you were working so hard and were so stressed, you took up smoking. Yeah. Because you were smoking for that long, you've now been diagnosed with terminal lung cancer at 55. So you're telling me that you ground so hard at work for all that time to retire, and now you're gonna die before you get to retire.
Yeah, and it's so tragic. Yeah,
but, like,
and as I said, there is something to be said for working hard, but
yeah,
also, like, live your life and be kind to yourself too. Don't run yourself into the ground because whatever, that seems to be the social norm. I like I said, I think that's shifting though. I think more people are taking more vacations and traveling more and seeing the value of, like, a 4-day work week or more vacation time or whatever it is, getting outside more, those types of things.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, I think workplaces and the government is realizing that it's a win-win.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, people are
healthier, they're more productive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, productivity only increases the happier employers are. Your employees. You can't just run people into the ground, man. That's not how people work. They're not. Overall, I would think just general happiness in the workplace would be better if all companies were kind of that Google model where they have fucking nap pods and things like that. Like, that sounds like a glorious place to work. I don't know. Maybe it's not.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about, like, I'm a big napper. I am all about intuition and listening to what your body needs at the time. If your body feels like you need a 2-hour nap and you can take a 2-hour nap, take a 2-hour nap.
Careful.
Like, honestly.
I think some of that is self-indulgent where people, I honestly think there's that culture too where we celebrate, like, fucking laziness to some degree where people are like, they, like, that nap, I mean, it's a meme now, the naps and all that stuff and treating yourself with junk food or whatever and, like, patting yourself on the back for being a lazy shit. That kind of, I mean, I get it, it's just humor, it's silly, but there are people that kind of embody that, like young people that are just like, nap today or whatever, nap life, and I don't know. I hope that's satirical, but I feel like a lot of people nap a lot.
What is wrong with naps?
There's nothing wrong with naps. There's nothing, but you know what I mean? I think some people probably nap a little too much. Like, they're like, oh, I just worked a 4-hour shift. Nap life. It's like, Jesus Christ, man. Come on. Like, I'm all for living life, but let's, you know, not pat yourself on the back too much for a fucking 4-hour mindless shift at whatever job you just did. I'm being too harsh, probably. Live your life. I don't care. Yeah. Do whatever you're going to do. Doesn't affect me. What was your first experience with marijuana? Can you remember?
Oh, I mean, I don't remember my first experience.
Really? Okay, what's the earliest experience you can remember?
I remember a very early experience.
Go.
I feel like this is so classic of so many people's experiences.
Yeah.
I was at my house. It was in high school, probably like grade 12. I was with a couple of my friends and they brought weed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a joint and they're like, let's go to the park and smoke it. And I was like, okay. So whenever, and I was like anti-weed in high school.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I have changed so much in the last year. It's crazy. I hated weed.
In the last year.
Literally, like, year, 2 year, whatever. I don't know. Crazy.
I've known you since college. You haven't been the last year.
But anyway, high school, they brought the joint over and we smoked in the park and I like instantly fucking fell asleep. Marijuana was like an instant sedative for me for the longest time.
Interesting. I remember when I did it, I don't know whose house we were at, but some friends of mine, it was high school, maybe 10th or 11th grade, and we did the old water bottle bong technique where somebody
that
had
freaked me out. I always felt like I was gonna get like instant cancer from
that. Oh yeah, you're smoking plastic basically.
So
I melted the hole in the water bottle and put the pipe through and the stem through, and then a little choke on the back and a little bit of water, and that was instant burn. You feel that immediately. Burns your throat and your pee high, and it was a good time. And then you get that was my very first time, so we went into Max and got snacks, and I was super paranoid because my eyes were like tomatoes, and I'm sure the clerk was judging us, but fuck that guy.
Yeah,
it was a good time.
You don't know anything about your life.
Yeah, and that opened up a world for me. I probably did indulge a little too much in the devil's lettuce for the next couple of years.
Everyone goes through that.
Yeah. I really do think, though, on developing minds, it's probably not good. It's probably not a great thing for, like, 16-year-olds to be smoking.
I don't think any alteration of the brain on developing minds is positive.
Like, you should probably... Everyone listening to this... If you're under 25, you really shouldn't smoke.
No.
Oh, that just made me very unpopular.
How old am I?
You're probably in your late 30s.
Oh, what
I'm kidding. I think Miranda's like 25 years old.
So offended.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. Like, I think it's a risk-benefit thing. So, yes, the evidence does say, like, not to smoke under 25 because of that brain.
I was kidding, but that is probably true because your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25.
The research says, the current research, but this is the research I've been hearing for, like, 10 years now, so I'm pretty sure it's probably changed. The research was saying that your brain develops up until you're 25.
Yeah.
So, like, your frontal lobe is not completely developed until you're 25. However, this is a loose theory. No one quote me on this. I'm actually just thinking about this a bit now. And it's like, we throw medications at people for things like PTSD and ADHD that we know affects the frontal lobe. I actually have both of those.
Not just that, though. I mean, everything. When you think about it, probably just based on this generation and the way we grew up, before you were 25, you were probably pounding sugar into your body. Coffee before you're 25, cigarettes possibly. Yeah, like Tylenol, Advil, all that shit. Like, I mean, it's not necessarily the same as a psychoactive drug, but alcohol even before you're 25 definitely shouldn't be happening. Like, you're killing brain cells for sure. But, you know, whatever. Live your life. Just everything in moderation, I guess, is probably the best thing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But I'm just thinking, like, you have a kid, and I'm not saying put a kid on cannabis for ADHD. That's silly. But, like, I don't know. We're
first or second grade,
25 having that, but we put them on speed. That's okay?
Yeah. That is a weird thing. I actually spoke to Joanne Rawson about this one of the last episodes. ADHD is, I mean, and again, I would have to reference Gabor Mate and the belief structure that he has about ADHD. That's another one of those disorders that's like, if you look at it holistically, you can potentially solve that without the use of pharmacological therapy. It's like, you don't necessarily need Ritalin or I don't know whatever the other drugs are for treating ADHD now.
Yeah.
It's just like a lot of the times in my experience, it's been diet. Like a lot of those kids are consuming, you know, 80 grams of sugar in a sitting, and then yeah, no shit, they can't sit still. Well, you try sitting still after you just ate a bag of candy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, sleep. Like, how many of these kids have fucking TVs in their room?
Yeah. Or just, yeah, everything as far as stimulation. And then the combination of, like, a bad home life. Not necessarily a bad home life, but a tumultuous home life, perhaps. Or,
yeah,
a cell phone or just any number of things that would influence their energy levels and their mood and everything else, their propensity towards like acting out behavior, violence, things like that. Man, kids are complicated.
I know, and like to be honest, I think of every mental health diagnosis on a spectrum, like whether it be anxiety, depression, PTSD, ADHD, whatever you want to go with. I think everyone has, like, if you think of everyone having like those little like toggles, like you do on Sims, like this much anxiety, you know,
for sure.
Like, I feel like some people are all cranked up. And it just depends where you fall on the spectrum. And there's a point on the spectrum where you need different interventions, and they're appropriate. Like, there is a point on a PTSD or on a depression spectrum or on an ADHD spectrum where, you probably require we need to try medications because nothing else is working and your life is being severely impaired.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with like with depression as well. Medication is for sure required in some or a lot of cases, but before you get to that point, it's certainly valuable to at least, because sometimes it's like episodic depression and it's like, oh, you just lost your job. Oh, you just broke up with your girlfriend. Oh, there was a death of somebody close to you. So maybe those things are affecting your mood over a long term. But it's also like, if you've been depressed for a while, have you been stuck in a job that you hate? Do you have friends that you can rely on? Do you have any love interest right now? Like, all of those environmental factors could add up to you being a depressed person. So before you just pour into the pharmaceuticals, maybe, you know, try and remedy some of those things first. But I'm not a doctor.
And I think that's literally just speaking to holistic health. If your emotional health or your sexual health or your occupational health or any of that stuff is back, like a lot of that's your spiritual health, right? Like that third piece of that holistic health triad, your physical, mental, and spiritual. That spiritual, people get confused about that one, but it's really just your path in life. Like, do you have a sense of who you are, where you're going, and what you're here to do? And that's a big one. A lot of people, I feel like, do not have that one.
That's true, yeah. Well, yeah, there are a lot of young people just wandering. Even myself, like, I've changed careers now, like, 4 or 5 times, and I don't know what my calling is. I really don't, but I'm okay with that, and I don't really stress about that anymore. Like, I don't derive meaning from my life, from my occupation. I go after the things that I'm passionate about. That's part of the reason why I did this podcast, because I wanted to do it, so I just did it. And I think more people have to, like, be willing to take that risk. But anyway, I don't want to keep talking about myself, but what I was going to ask you was, oh, there's that marijuana again. no, I got it. If people are leaning towards or curious about like medicinal marijuana and its uses, what types of things could they treat, and why would it be better to potentially go with like a CBD oil or medicinal marijuana over some of the other pharmacological options that are out there?
Yeah, so a lot of stuff, you'll notice that a lot of the approved indications for medical marijuana are related to inflammatory disorders. So a lot of the ones you'll see are Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy is a big one. Any really chronic muscle or joint pain responds really well. Neuropathic pain, so that means either damage to a nerve or there's been a, say they've had back pain for so long and now their body's just confused, so they feel like they're always in pain even when they're not in pain. It can help with that, which is awesome because there's not a lot of pharmacological treatments that help that, and oftentimes people just have to live with that. Anxiety, headaches, depression, insomnia, all of these things, it's really helpful. Where you'd look at CBD versus THC. So CBD, I'm sure it's all the rage in the news right now, so I'm sure you guys have heard of it, but it stands for cannabidiol. It's one of the compounds found in the cannabis plant, and it's non-psychoactive. So it's the one that doesn't affect your brain at all. It doesn't cause you to feel high. And that's because it's working mostly in your body, not your brain. So it actually works to help modulate your immune system. So it's responding to inflammation better, reducing inflammation throughout your body, and just helping your immune system generally function better. So that can lead to decreased gut issues, better digestion, less mood issues, sleeping better, less joint pain. Yeah, so all that kind of stuff. And why going with medical is smart if you actually have a medical indication is because the more individualized and specific your treatment is to you, like the more educated the person providing your treatment is on cannabis, the better time you're going to have. If you have someone that's not really educated on the different compounds, things like terpenes. If you don't know what a terpene is, then that's my point exactly. most people don't, but it's a really important thing to consider if you're using cannabis for medical purposes. So it's just that knowledge base. Like, it's such a brand new area of medicine that if you're using cannabis for medicinal purposes, I highly recommend talking to a practitioner just like you would with any other medicine. Why you would use cannabis over another pharmacological treatment, that's a hard one. It's very specific to the person. So there are times where I'm sure I would look at a patient's chart and be like, no, you should probably try this first before cannabis. Mm. For example, chronic pain. If someone comes into their doctor and they're saying, I'm having chronic pain, there's a kind of like a pain tree. So the doctor will start at first level of treatment, which is called an SSNRI. And those are things like amitriptyline or gabapentin. So research shows, the research that is out now shows that that is most effective for pain usually. Now, still this really only, you see effectiveness in, I think it's like 9 out of 50 people.
Okay.
So that's like 20%.
Yeah.
So as the research stands now, like in clinic research, cannabis is kicking around that too.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue with the research in cannabis, and we were talking about this earlier, is that there hasn't really been able to be a lot of research on cannabis.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you're just looking at pure studies, it's going to look like cannabis isn't really the greatest medication choice for a lot of things over current pharmacological choices, because there's mm-hmm. so much research on the pharmacological right. choices. If you're just looking at amounts of evidence, but I don't look at that. So yeah. I like to go by, I take all of that into account. I read all the articles, I learn about that, but I also go by clinical evidence, like patient testimonials, like yeah,
anecdotal.
I don't care if this thing said there's like a 10% chance of cannabis working. We tried cannabis with this person, which in the majority of people is extremely safe to just try.
Yeah.
With like no side effects. And it works for so many people. And it's just like the coolest thing. Like, if any of you listening have an autoimmune or a chronic disease and you've given up hope because you just think nothing's ever going to be able to help you and you have to feel like this for the rest of your life,
you have nothing to lose.
Option for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So two things for me that pop up for that is, one, the placebo effect is a real thing.
Yes.
Like, if you believe that it's going to help you, then it probably will. It probably yeah. will to some degree. Like, the placebo effect is a measurable effect on biology, on psychology. That's why they account for that when they do controlled tests. They control for the placebo effect. But and then the other thing is that I think long-term side effects for marijuana, for a lot of the known side effects for pharmacological a lot of pharmacological treatments, the long-term side effects of marijuana, although they're unknown, are probably less harmful, as far as we know, than some of the treatments that are out there. Like some medications, if you look closely enough, they damage your kidneys, they damage your liver, they raise your risks of certain types of cancer, you know. And so it's a quality of life thing at towards the end of your life. If you're okay with increasing your risk of all those things or damaging your body in that way just to deal with this one issue, then for sure, maybe that's for you. But from my understanding, I don't see those side effects long term for marijuana so far. And maybe that's just because it hasn't been researched enough, but I doubt it. I really doubt it. It just seems like a much healthier option for a lot of people. So
yeah, I agree. And a lot of my patients are coming in, and unfortunately it's usually when they're already older and have already developed these like liver and kidney issues related to all their medications. Mm. Now they're coming in and being like, I have chronic kidney failure, so I cannot be on these medications, like I need cannabis, because cannabis does not get excreted through the kidneys,
right?
So it doesn't touch the kidneys whatsoever. So that's a big plus for cannabis over yeah. a lot of other medications, especially in the elderly. Yep. But like you said, like for these young people who are put on these medications, like from a very young age, like I live with someone who has an autoimmune disorder and she's on so many medications.
Yeah, and you really like, have to do
oh
your
my
research.
God.
Yeah, you really do have to do your research. I was on, when I was 15, I believe it was on methotrexate or... Imuran or something like that, and then I looked into it, and it increases your risk of lymphoma or like liver cancer, so things like that are, you know, very serious. And I went and talked to my doctor about weaning me off of them because I didn't want to get cancer when I was older. And he was like, well, it's a quality of life now versus later type thing. And I was like, okay, well, there has to be some alternative. Like, it can't be feel good now or get cancer later. That can't be your answer to me right now. And that was all he said. He's like, well, that's up to you, that's for you to decide, but these are your options. And I was like, oh, this fucking sucks.
And I feel like that's the news that a lot of people get with various autoimmune and inflammatory disorders. It's like, well, your life is over, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're going to have to be on this medication that causes you 25 side effects. You're going to have to deal with it.
Pick your poison, basically. You can deal with your sickness, or you can get sick in a different way.
Yeah.
And potentially a worse way. So, I don't know. But yeah, marijuana. The cure-all miracle drug. Take it, and you'll feel better about everything in life.
Exactly.
Maybe. I don't know. Probably not. You never know. Mostly, you'll just eat a lot of junk food.
Yeah.
That's fine, too.
However, like, I don't know. You get to a point where do you still have the munchies? I don't even get the munchies anymore.
I'm going to eat half a bag of chips as soon as we stop talking right now. And, like, I'm looking at these little Reese's cluster bites. They're phenomenal. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to probably mix and match where, like, I have one chip and then a Reese's cluster, because that's how I roll. Sweet and salty. It's the best.
You're giving me the munchies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, they're, yeah. If you haven't tried it, you should try it. Reese's clusters. Go buy them. Holla. Reese's, get at me. I'll sponsor. Anyway.
All the Reese's clusters you could ever eat. Can you imagine?
I'd be the fattest person in the world. I'd be on my 600 pound life. Miranda Jones, how can people get in touch with you if they want to talk to you on Instagram or however?
Yeah, so Instagram is probably the easiest if it's related to life coaching or any wellness questions you might have or things about general life shit. So Wild Hippie Child is my personal account. You can give it a follow. And like I said, the my business account is Chaos Holistics, Chaos Holistics. You can contact me through there. If it's about medical cannabis, you can contact me. Probably my email is the easiest. Email is mjones@growwisehealth.com, and I will we'll get you moving.
Wonderful. And you can reach me at S Fardella. At Scott Fardella is my now rebranded professional account, or on the podcast at Into the Void Podcast. And that's about it. I'll repost all of Miranda's contact information in the posts to come. And happy Canada Day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Happy Canada Day. Have a dupe.